Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Grunewald, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Rocky Howard. Rocky is the founder of Diversiology.io and Chief People and Equity Officer at Textio, a globally recognized workplace strategist and one of SIA's Global Power 150 Women in Staffing. Rocky blends decades of HR leadership with a deep commitment to building inclusive, high-performing, people-first cultures. Rocky shares her journey of discovering that the moment she stopped trying to fit the corporate mold, her career took off, and it gave others permission to do the same. They'll talk about how culture isn't just set by leaders, but lived by teams every day, and why inclusion has to be built through small, consistent behaviors rather than one-off initiatives. She also reflects on the lessons learned from DEIB's recent challenges, where well-intentioned efforts sometimes excluded people, and how the path forward lies in creating simple, sustainable practices that make inclusion part of the daily rhythm of work. Along the way, Rocky highlights how human-centered tools and practical frameworks can help teams focus on the moments that matter. It's a conversation full of insight on authenticity, culture, and the future of inclusion at work. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Rocky Howard. Rocky has a lot of cool titles. So she's the founder and chief diversologist at Diversiology. I knew I was going to get that wrong. .io. She's also the chief people and equity officer at Textio and a fellow podcaster. So you've got the Grown Woman Wednesdays.
Yes.
Which sounds cool. I'm going to get you to explain the three B's later because you're going to bring more pop than I do to it. And then you've got, you're doing the Inclusive Insights series with Transform and some cool videos on LinkedIn, humanity practice videos. So there's just, you're bringing a lot to the world, Rocky. Thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so very excited to be here, Dane. And, you know, you and I were chatting. We have some intersections. We've circled each other. And so now to be here together is pretty awesome. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So tell me, how did you come to be doing all of these really cool things? And, you know, what's driving your energy?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I have been really lucky, really blessed, and I've worked really hard. And so I spent most of my career in the staffing world, working for incredible organizations, leading some amazing teams, working with amazing clients. And so I had one whole amazing career, and then got to the point where I was like, I've done everything that I want to do here. I had exceeded my own expectations for what my career growth would look like there. And it was time for me to do something that I felt like was legacy work. And so then I really moved into chief diversity officer, chief people and equity officer, because you know what, like throughout all of the staffing and especially the last 10 years, started to build this reputation of helping my clients with their diversity work, right? And ultimately for me, we all know that diversity has been weaponized recently, but it just really has always been, it just shouldn't be so damn hard to show up at work and be yourself, right? And how do we make that easier for people? That's what it's always been about for me. And I wanted to do that work. And then while I was doing that work, I figured out how naive I was. And understanding that, and I think this is a misnomer, like people think of diversity officers, they think of HR officers, and they think that that's a really soft job and anyone can do it. And that's so not true. There's a real set of core competencies and skills that practitioners have to really lead organizations that are high performing, inclusive, engaged, and human centered, right? And so after a couple of years, I decided, yeah, you know what? I really want to take all the things that I love and I want to do it on my own terms. And I want to do it with companies that I really enjoy working with. And I want to build resources and content and technology that really helps empower practitioners and allows them to build those more human-centered, inclusive, and high-performing, because one doesn't come without the other, organizations. And so I just decided to do it on my own terms. In my world, I just decided to do it the grown woman way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And tell me about the Grown Woman podcast, because we were talking pre-show and that sounds like it does have some pop.
Oh, it does. So look, I am now 56 and I'm very proud to be 56. And when I was in my 40s, I had a 40th birthday party and my girlfriend showed up and I was the first one in my crew to turn 40. Yeah. And I really wanted people to be like, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, this is horrible. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I couldn't wait to turn 40. And so I gave them at the time what was called, I gave them all scrolls that were called the Grown-Ass Woman Rules, Rights, and Responsibilities.
Love it.
And like, it became this language between this set of women and people kept saying, you need to do more with it. You need to do more with it. More people seem to do this message. And as I went through my 40s, I got really tired of everything that I saw was like a Depends commercial or wrinkle cream. And look, No shade, but I'm like, where is the content for bold, brilliant, badass women like me? Like, I came 40 and I felt like I really came into myself. And so I wanted to create a venue to really highlight bold, brilliant, badass women. And we've had some amazing guests. We continue to run it monthly. We just did one with an employment attorney who has turned into a diversity advocate and just did things her own way. And we talked about the difference between like provision and purpose. And I love giving everybody like a little midweek boost of inspiration and highlighting bold, brilliant, badass women.
I love that. I love that. And there's something really interesting. I'm now in my mid-40s and there's something really interesting about waking up and realizing that you've got it. You've got the experience. You've got the wisdom. You've got the energy. You can really go and get some stuff done now. And I just don't think enough people are talking about it.
They don't get talking about it. And I think for me, the unlock was, I don't have to apologize for being who I am. I am grown. I am way grown. And I get to show up in the world the way I want to show up. And so that's like, I want to create worlds where people get to show up and be authentic. Now, I don't believe people should bring their whole selves to work. We should retire that phrase. But I do think people deserve to be able to be authentic, both in work and out. And that was the beginning of that journey for me.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And there's something that I think ties to energy and actually restoring energy, because you can have energy to go and do something and then it can be draining. Like, let's say you put on that corporate armor and you go in and you do the really killer presentation, but you're being someone that you're not, or you're presenting in a way that's not like the way you would naturally show up. And yet when you get to go and bring a bit more of your own flair, I think that's, you come out and you're like, number one, that wasn't as hard. And number two, I really enjoyed that. I want to go and do something like that again. So I think that's something in teams.
Here's a really interesting thing and part of my evolution. So back in 2000 and single digits, we'll call it.
Yeah.
I worked for a company and had been passed over for a promotion that hadn't been posted. And quite frankly, it felt like it might have been a biased decision. The person that got promoted was on leave, was a white woman, we were peers. And then all of a sudden it was like abracadabra, she's been promoted. And I remember going to my boss at the time and saying, look, I'm a big girl. If I'm not ready, if I'm not qualified, tell me that. But the way this whole thing went down, quite frankly, is shitty. It just was shitty. And basically the answer came back that I didn't politic enough. I didn't spend time with the right people. Now, I will tell you, I'm a wife and mother of four. And at that time, all of my kids were still at home. And so, like, I don't have time to go out to a beer and golf with the boys. I've got four kids that I'm trying to spend time with. And I made a decision at that time, because I don't know if anybody who's listening can relate to feeling this way. And our, you know, as leaders, we need to watch for this. But I had been doing everything I could to code switch and follow the corporate norms and dress like people wanted me to dress. And I was doing all the things. And I thought, and to your point, it sucked so much energy out of me. And then I thought, I am doing all of this and you're still telling me there's a barrier. You know what? I'm done. And I came home to my husband and said, yeah, like, you're going to have to figure out how to raise these kids on this crappy middle management salary, because I'm done. I'm done trying to climb the ladder. I'm done trying to be who they want me to be. And in fact, that's how I wound up in the back in staffing and back in the recruitment process outsourcing world. Because I said, look, I'll go into RPO. I'll be an account manager. I'll work with clients that I want. I love the work that I do, and I know I'm good at it, so I'll do the work. When I don't like this client's politics, I will have been there long enough. They'll put me on a new account. And, you know, like, we'll be able to hopefully feed the kids doing this. And I was like, but what I am going to do is, I'm tired of wearing this armor. It's gotten too heavy. I'm tired of code switching. I'm tired of dressing in things that make me uncomfortable. I'm going to show up as I am, right? And that's what I did. Here's the magic. And here's what I want everybody to hear from this story. The minute I did all of that and stripped all it out and did not waste all of this energy trying to fit into this mold, my career took off.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't only that I was good at what I did, I now had energy to show up in a way that was me, which is what, you know, the roles required. And so we have a joke in my house that despite myself, I grew up the corporate ladder and went as far as I wanted to. And so I think there's a real lesson there for us as leaders, for us as individuals who show up in workplaces, is that when you can show up and be authentically yourself and you're not wasting all of that energy gets repurposed, right? And it allows you to achieve better heights. And that's why I think there's a correlation between culture, inclusion, belonging, trust, and engagement to retention and high performance and innovation.
Yeah, but I think it's a great example. It's a wonderful story, Rocky. And it makes total sense. Like, you think about that energy and actually go beyond the energy. We often talk about someone who has swagger, let's say, or a spring in their step, but that stuff's contagious. If you're on a team and Rocky turns up and she's just bringing it, like, yeah, getting the work done, but with an energy, with fun, with a different look, you're like, hey, I want to be more like Rocky. Like, that, it pulls people along. It creates a slipstream, which I think is so important in teams.
Well, it also lets, I remember, like, I just kind of was going along doing my own thing, right? Yeah. And I was in a VP role at this time. By this time, I'd worked myself up to a VP role, and I was transferring to another division and doing a move. And the first time that this, like, struck me that it wasn't only about me, because for a long time, it just felt like it was about me. Like, I got some freedom that was just about me. And I remember someone saying to me, in fact, two people saying to me as I was leaving, you showing up the way you show up lets me know it's okay for me to show up the way I want to show up, and that I work for a company where that's safe. And I would have not known that if I didn't see you do it and you be successful at doing it. And so to your point about it being contagious, it's not only the swag that's contagious. I do hope I have a little bit of swag, that bold, brilliant, badass, but it's really that ability to create psychological safety for others because they see you showing up in a certain way.
No, I love that. And you mentioned, you know, it would be hard for us to have this conversation without talking about the weaponization of diversity or DEIB. I've found it personally very disappointing, but it is what it is. I think what's fascinating by the moment that we're in now is, like, what can we learn in terms of how we now go forward? Because we're not going to stop this really important work. And I'm intrigued by, like, where you're seeing continued energy or new pathways opening up or learnings that we can take forward.
Yeah. I think the challenge is, I'm trying not to make this overcome the whole conversation. And it is heartbreaking to me because it is the work that I love. And again, it is all about how do we create spaces where everyone feels safe to contribute to organizations, right? Mm-hmm. I think in certain cases, we brought so much passion and we brought so much of the social justice to it. And in doing that and trying to build more inclusive spaces, we actually excluded people. And I think that's what caused the actual friction. And, you know, like, we have to be honest, there's still bias in the world. There's still racism in the world. And we didn't bring people along. Also, and I will tell you, I was saying this back in 2020, that there was a problem. Like, the world came together in the moment of George Floyd's murder.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I have to tell you, as a Black woman who was married to a Black man and has given birth to 4 children, including a Black son, I, while everybody else was like, oh, the world is rallying around this, I have to tell you, I was kind of pissed off. And here's why I was pissed off. Because, unfortunately, Black men and Black women are murdered in communities every single day. And it felt like to me, like, people were bored and had a lot of time on their hands. So this became the charity of choice at the time.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that, like, and it was really interesting to have conversations, because I also think that people aren't trying to be malicious, but they don't know. Like, there were people that I had worked with for years that when I started having conversations about my husband getting stopped in our neighborhood because he didn't look like he should be driving the car he was driving, or the conversations I have to have with my son especially, or the conversations I have to have with my Black gay daughter that make her life a little bit difficult in terms of the way she shows up. And people who really were great colleagues, and I would go so far to say friends, didn't understand that we were having those experiences. And so I do think a lot of it is not malicious. We do approach the world from our own lived experience. Some of it in today's world, it's just malicious, because ultimately people don't like to give up power and privilege. And so what I believe happens in the weaponization of DEI is that people who didn't want to give up power and privilege, that felt isolated, then rallied back. And we brought so much social justice into the corporations instead of looking at actually how do we come back in terms of organizations and what are the skills that we as practitioners need to actually build sustainable practices that allow for this human connection. And I think that's where the problem came. And so, you know, there was a lot of friction around it. In conversations, what I would say is that I've had an opportunity, both through the work that I do with Diversiology, through the work that I do at Textio, to be able to talk to several leaders who are leading DEI, And the message that I am hearing is that people don't want to stop the work. They believe in the very tenets and the concepts of making workplaces diverse and inclusive and equitable for everyone and for the multiple dimensions of diversity. Because yes, I think we don't think about it that way. Like, at some point in time, God willing, y'all are all going to be old. So like, yeah, what, like, you're, yeah, not thinking about what the workforce is going to look like for you when you're over 40. That's a dimension of diversity. But yes, we, you know, we're not thinking about, at some point in time, maybe we're disabled or we're sick and we fall into that category. We don't, yeah, think about the social economic pieces of what diversity looks like. We get caught in, you know, these more polarizing conversations, and we don't think that at some point in time, everybody is going to fit into a dimension of diversity. And the stage that we set in organizations about how we deal with it and how we operationalize it will actually create the experience that you have. And so as I'm talking to organizations and practitioners, what they're saying is, yes, we still want to do the work. Unfortunately, yeah, our current political situation has made it such where people are kind of scared and they're kind of frozen. We've got executive orders that aren't law, but we're supposed to treat them like law. Yep. If we don't do it, then our funding is taken away. If we don't have funding, we can't do anything. Diversity won't matter because our companies won't matter. And so, yep, we're in this place where we're frozen because we don't know what to do. We want to do the right thing. So many people want to do the right thing, and we don't know what that is. And that actually is part of the way that these humanity practices are done. Because ultimately, what we need to do is treat people like human beings. And you can't legislate my behavior. You can't legislate, right, how I treat someone. And that is not about a specific dimension of diversity. You can't call that about a quota. You can't say I'm excluding people. Like, what humanity practices are go back to the very tenets of what DEI was trying to build, in my opinion, which is we want everyone to feel like there's a place for them.
I think that's so well put. I love the way you picked up on the social justice piece, creating some awkwardness or some accountability or triggering defensiveness, as we've seen in a lot of cases in different realms. And I love the way you come back to this sustainable practices. Yes. I think that's, you know, it may well be the gift of the moment that we're living through, that actually, instead of us running out and naming and having, you know, finite budgets to do good work in businesses, we can say, this is how we build teams. This is how we run businesses. This is how we behave in our communities. And it can be more sustainable and more universal.
Yeah. And I think there's always been a challenge, and I'm working through some things to provide tools with people. But I think, yeah, the challenge has really been, we look to our leaders to drive culture. We look to the HR person, we look to the DEI person, we look to the CEO. And yes, our executives set a very important stage for the culture of our organization. But they can't force the culture every single day. Everyone has a role in the culture. And I haven't found a way or a tool or a framework that would allow me to have everyone in the org understand what they could do to actually impact the culture, and in a way that doesn't take a ton of time, right? And so that's what I'm working on building now, because I think that deals with literally the principles that we want it to drive in DEI, but it also helps with communication. It also helps with engagement. It also helps with trust. And like, the other thing that we're all dealing with is the intersection of technology. We're all dealing with, yes, you know, budgets that have been cut. We've got less people that are being challenged to do more things. a once a year anti-bias training isn't going to get it. But if you tell me I've got to do something, Rocky, where my people have to be doing something for 2, 3, 4 hours a week, that's not going to cut it either. And so, you know, like our Textio CEO likes to talk about, Jensen Harris likes to talk about simple, like we do things that are simple and focused. And I believe in that wholeheartedly. I believe that we need to look at things that are simple and sustainable and pragmatic when we look at solutions.
I love that. Having trouble catching up with my pen.
There's a lot
of good content. I think this whole piece of not relying on our leaders to set and guide culture is massive. I've had so many conversations over the last 3 years around shared leadership or distributed leadership. And it's very much talking about how we set our tasks, how we make decisions. It's quite structural, but the reality is all of that feeds culture too. And that's where I love this tie back to the humanity practices. Like, let's get that right.
Let's get it right. Like, we just put out a newsletter too, where people can see like the practices of the week in one place. Yeah. It is called the Weekly Humanity Practice. So if you follow me, Rocky with an I, on LinkedIn, you can follow the newsletter and you can get it all at once. And then we'll be announcing like more stuff to come, because I think this is something really important. And I think people are hungry. People are hungry to make a difference at whatever level they are. They're hungry to have more human interactions. They're hungry to feel like they can be more like themselves. Managers need a way to help people to do that. It with a long list of other things to do, leaders want to have impact, and we need to be able to give them a simple way to do that. So that's the latest problem that I'm adding to my list to see how we can solve.
It's cool. And it reminds me of, we had Gary Rich, who was the former CEO of WD-40, on, and he gave me this great equation. He said culture equals values plus behaviors times consistency. So this behaviors times consistency, it's right there. Like, it's quick. Any team member, any leader can just start using it, and it creates impact. And I would imagine that swells into, you know.
That comes down to the work I like to do. Like, you know, and I'm fired up on two fronts right now, because, you know, like I said, we're working on something and it is behavior based. And so to your point, it's like, here's the values, here's the behaviors. We're going to give it to you so people can do it consistently, and then we're going to show you the impact. It's the same thing. Like, at Textio, we're working on some great new stuff that I can't quite talk about yet, but it ties into how do we help people in the moments that matter? How do we help leaders in the moments that matter to make the right decisions in terms of the hiring process? And how do we make it easier for you to get the right feedback in those moments that matter? So I love doing work that allows technology to be the bridge to help us build the moments that matter. And it's one of the reasons why I love the work in the team at Textio. So same, if you're not following Textio, I'll give you a hint. We're about to relaunch our Textio newsletter. I think the first, I literally was just previewing what the first relaunch of the newsletter is going to look like. And it's going to relaunch, I think, the first Tuesday in September. So again, you know, that's another great resource that you can look at. And we'll be having data in there and how it ties in. And we'll be highlighting practitioners. And man, like, that's the stuff you really want to see.
Yeah. And Textio, tell me a little bit more about what the platform's doing there.
Yeah, so Textio, you know, like, here's the cool thing. Textio was AI before OpenAI, right?
Yeah.
And so Textio for 10 years has been a platform for HR practitioners. And back in the day, like, and we still use this, companies use this still, where we would help you build a job description that was not only written with the bias stripped out of it and could give you a Textio score, but more importantly, or equally as importantly, it helped you attract the right kind of people to the job because it was built in the right kind of language. Language matters, right? And as Textio has evolved, and so, you know, we have literally, you know, billions of bytes of data that have helped us inform this. And we've used those, that AI infrastructure. And so we've been doing this specifically to help HR and talent teams for 10 years. We were ahead of all of this.
Way ahead.
And so when you talk about trusted resources that allow you, because like as we get into this AI piece, it gets a little, you know, it can get a little sketchy. Like, can I trust this piece of technology? So you want to work with people who have a trusted track record and someone who can understand, and it was built for the work that you do. And so we built that platform for HR practitioners, for talent acquisition leaders. And so whether you were doing recruiting work and we can help you do that, or feedback product and help you to help you build more equitable feedback, we've been along that journey. And now we're going to be taking a new exciting next step. Dane, maybe I'll come back and talk about it when we can announce it.
You should. I mean, feedback.
You like the way I just invited myself back on your podcast?
Yeah. You're doing my work for me, which is great. I love it. But Rocky, the feedback one's one that's always intrigued me, because feedback is so incomplete in so many organizations, not just the timing, but like how one manager gives feedback versus another, how one manager gives feedback to Rocky versus to Dane. And I've seen like insane examples of where bias is showing up. One employee's getting a lot of like constructive, forward focused feedback. The other's getting a lot of like reflective, hey, you let us down here, this wasn't good. So I'm fascinated by where technology can help to lift the quality and the completeness of feedback.
Well, one of Textio's co-founders, Kieran Snyder, has done excellent deep research. You can find that research on our website, and it talks about this evolution. I think, and in fact, Kieran just did a post today on LinkedIn about how she got it wrong, right? Like what she got wrong about kind of performance management and feedback and what she got right. And I believe in the post, she talks about her very first like research around this goes back to 2014. And so Nerd Processor is Kieran's newsletter. Again, a really great resource to follow. Kieran does data stories, and she does it in this really interesting and engaging way, which is pretty cool. And she can tell a story. But like the kind of really cool thing is that she's watched this evolution and looked at how feedback is given across multiple dynamics. And then how can we jump in and how can technology intersect to help that? She also talks about the fact that it is, and Textio has a belief that training doesn't work. And so think about it. If I'm a new manager and you train me to give feedback, and, you know, in year one that I started and I haven't done it consistently, it doesn't work. I actually many, many years ago had a live example of that. I had a manager that was just giving me all of this horrible feedback. And a colleague of mine had said to me, she treats you differently than us. And so we did a switch. And so literally we wrote each other's reports and sent them to her. And we saw that when she didn't know it was my work, she gave very different feedback. And the person who was like her number one, when I submitted hers, she gave it very critical feedback. And I can't say that this was a bias issue, because quite frankly, the manager was Black. But there wasn't a racial bias issue, but there was certainly some kind of bias of some time. Yeah, and 100%. So we see this happen all the time. And like, how do we use technology to start to bring it to the attention in real time and help people course correct?
Yeah, That's fascinating. I'll definitely check out Karen's newsletter. And not trusting training is another theme that I'm exploring right now, because I think we're getting learning all wrong. And I met a great entrepreneur, Mark Golioff, with a platform called Aris, that he's doing a lot of micro learning. And he was saying that right now we're seeing all generations, not just Gen Z, coming in and having a preference for, you know, short text-based learning or video-based learning. And they don't want to go and do modules or classroom-based learning because they can't, it doesn't turn up in the flow of their work. So I'm intrigued by what you're seeing in that area, Rocky.
Oh, I am definitely a believer that as we built the Diversiology platform, one of the things that we offer is training, and no training module is more than 20 minutes because we know people can't learn and like that. And so like we usually do, like there's 5 modules, an intro, 3 core and an outro, and all of that we have set up to be 15 to 20 minutes because we know outside of that, people lose the attention span. I mean, we live in a world where people speak in 140 characters, right? They just not only that, but the reality of the work situations we work in, as I sit with 6 screens in front of me, is that there's always a distraction. Oh, this person is slacking me. I've got a text message coming in. My calendar just dinged that I've got a meeting to be in. It's all of that channel switching, and our brains can only, you know, like there's studies that show we do not multitask well. We think we do, we don't. And so now when you ask us to be silent and focus on this thing for an hour, I don't know that we still have the ability to do that well. So micro learning is definitely it, and it has to be engaging.
Yes. Yeah, it absolutely has to. It's interesting. Just recently, I've noticed that my accuracy is dropping, and I think it's because I'm using too many tools. Like, you know, I've gone from being heavily, you know, email and text based to, well, now there's stuff on Teams, and now there's stuff on WhatsApp, and now there's stuff on LinkedIn. And what I find that I'm doing is I'll read something in a hurry because I'm working here, and I'll jump to that text. And I'll read it in a hurry and I'll get it out of context. And then I'll set an action. Oh, they said Friday. They actually said not Friday. So now I'm sending an invite. And it just creates chaos.
It creates chaos because you're constantly going, right?
Yeah.
I have also learned, I think one of the things that has been one of the biggest learning lessons for me over the last year or two is I am a recovering workaholic is what I like to call myself.
Yeah.
And the challenge is that you don't give yourself enough brain break time to actually allow ideas and thoughts and, you know, the innovative things, the creative things, the depth of things to come through because you're constantly busy. And it's in the moments where I take time and I stop that the smartest things come through. But we think that doing nothing is doing nothing. And actually doing nothing sometimes can actually be doing something that's pretty doggone productive.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that. One of my mentors always said, she was like, hey, Dane, you've got too much going on. When you get in the car, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I listen to a podcast. And she's like, stop it. Yeah. She was like, just drive, no radio, no podcast, just drive and let your brain just sort of be free to go where it goes. And like find those moments in the day when you're not on.
For sure. My solve to that is I work from home, so I don't have car time, but I'm a bike rider and I will go get on my bike. Now, sometimes I do nothing. Most times I will put in a fiction book. Because it's not a podcast, it's not a business book. I don't need to focus. And I'm not talking like, you know, Jane Eyre kind of fiction. I'm talking about the fiction that if I zone out for a chapter, I won't have missed anything.
You're still there. Yeah.
You're still there. And again, it just helps, like, because if I'm listening to a podcast or a business book or something like that, my brain's still working. I'm still trying to capture the concepts and learn. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. So my last line of questioning is coming back to diversity. We actually did a piece of research earlier this year. We called it the DEIB reset. And we asked people, like, where have they been getting stuck in the past? And a big part of where they were getting stuck was not knowing or feeling comfortable where to actually get started. Yeah. 'Cause it's a lot of work to do. So I love what I'm seeing here on your website, that, you know, that you're here to sort of supercharge the practitioners, you know, provide those resources. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about how you do that.
Yeah, it was built because of that. Practitioners are really busy. And one of the things that I learned pretty quickly, even having chief titles, is most diversity practitioners don't have enough expertise, time, budget, resources to get everything done. And yeah. So how could I help solve that problem? So we have a free community. And in that free community, you've got access to diversity calendars, diversity guides, free resources, daily news that we actually filter for you. And a lot of our replays. So that is in our free community. And then what we've done in our paid offerings is imagine a world where, as a practitioner, on Thursday, you get a plan that says, here's what I do for the following week. Here's the theme. Here's the training I'm going to share with everybody. Here's the language. Here's what my managers are going to do. We've kind of coined it DIY DEI. And so that practitioners can cut and paste and keep going with content that they know has been built by a practitioner. And it makes their work easier. And then, to your point, we have games in there and engagement. But our training modules are 15 minutes or less. And so it's really easy to say to someone, you know, hey, check out this training. It's going to take you 15 minutes. We have specific content around ERG leaders because they don't get the support that they need. And so how do they continue to grow? So the whole concept behind diversity is that we help you operationalize inclusion. Comes back from running those big ops teams in staffing, right? And how did I take those skills to help others in this way?
And the cool thing about operationalizing it is that it's not just a box-ticking exercise that shows up periodically. It really is, going back to the behaviors that you touched on, it's a way to build it into the daily rhythm.
Well, and one of the things that we do as part of this, like, we give practitioners, here's six things that you can do, right? And again, we give them all the language. And one of them is telling people, like, here's what you can do this week. And it's usually a simple action that anyone can do. And so when I ask most practitioners, when's the last time you drove? Let's say you didn't do it every week, right?
Yeah.
Let's say you did it biweekly. When is the last time that you could say you consistently exposed your whole organization to 26 behavior changes in a year? The answer is usually, I can't tell you that because I don't have time to do that.
Yeah. Behavior change is hard. It needs a lot of reinforcement too.
It does. And it has to be simple enough where someone can catch on to it. And I believe what happens over time is that if I start doing this and I practice this and I go, oh, well, that wasn't as hard as I thought. Okay. And now I'm going to practice this. And then eventually people start thinking about things differently.
Yes.
And now you see culture shift.
Yeah. We had a coach come in once and they said, right at the beginning of the session, it was like team coaching. They're like, all right, pause, get out your phones. And we're like, oh, this is the opposite of how most sessions start. And he said, okay, now think of a team member that you haven't connected with recently and send them a text and say, hey, I was just thinking about you. I'm grateful for this piece of work that you've done. I'd love to get 15 minutes with you next week. And it was just as simple as that. Every leader in the room did it. And naturally that created a cascade effect into another meeting. And hopefully that leader then goes and does it into their team. So those little things just can spark a huge movement.
One of our first humanity practice talked about that. How about you just give somebody a shout out today? Why don't you just tell them, I've got your back. I see you. Right?
Yeah, it's powerful. So a final question that I always like to ask is, as you think about the future of teamwork and what teams get to go and do and have, you know, in this, you know, modern and tech-enabled workplace that we're continuing to explore. What's exciting you? What would be a good measure of progress if you roll forwards a few years?
Yeah, I really think the future of work isn't about people versus technology or people versus AI. Like, that's, I think, a lot of the friction that's going on right now. I think it's a blend of both. And yeah. I think AI can help us optimize the resources we can, but only humans can help us maximize impact. And that's why yes. everything I do is around that. And how do we operationalize culture? Because I think at the end of the day, I say, you know, like, my goal is we can change the workplace one story, one conversation, one action at a time. And I'd like to see us get that done.
I like that. I like that. It fits very well with a lot of what I'm hoping to see. And yeah, I've really enjoyed the conversation. There's been some highlights for sure. I love the bring more you moment that you had early in your career and how that started to really move you forward and create that sort of contagious kind of pull through for other team members. I really appreciated the way you shone a light on where DEIB may have gone a little bit too far on the social justice side and how, you know, we can come back to sustainable practices in this kind of next iteration. I think that's wonderful. And it explains a lot of some of the tensions I think a lot of us live through in that moment, particularly the exclusion element that you touched on. Culture not just being the job of leaders, like it is absolutely something that teams need to be thinking about. How do we design for the inputs and contribution of team members? And then as we were wrapping up, we were talking a lot to, you know, not multitasking well, training not being efficient, and coming back to these more programmatic, more operationalized behaviors as we build better teams and businesses. So plenty for our listeners to take away. If any of them want to find out more about Textio, more about Diversiology, or just connect with you, Rocky, how do they best do that?
You can find us both on LinkedIn. Textio is T-E-X-T-I-O. You can follow us there, subscribe to the newsletter. Same with me. You can follow me, Rocky with an I, Howard, and subscribe to the Humanity Practice newsletter.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Rocky. It's been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We'll do it again soon because you've already invited yourself back.
Yeah, I already invited myself back. That's what bold, brilliant, badass women do.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dane.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,